Hello, and welcome to Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Many of us have listened to narrated audiobooks. Well, this week, we're going to get to meet one of the talents who has narrated many, many of these books.
We'll hear about what goes into creating an audiobook and what the experience is like from the narrator's perspective. But first to our tip of the week. This week's tip is audiobooks can be really enjoyable. And we're going to play you a small clip from one. And we'd like to thank the nice people at the National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, Library of Congress, for permission to play this clip.
Memoirs of a Geisha by Arthur Golden. Copyright 1997 by Arthur Golden. Read by Yolande Bavan. Chapter 1. Suppose that you and I were sitting in a quiet room overlooking a garden, chatting and sipping at our cups of green tea while we talked about something that had happened a long while ago. And I said to you, that afternoon when I met so-and-so was the very best afternoon of my life, and also the very worst afternoon. I expect you might put down your teacup and say, well now, which was it? Was it the best or the worst? Because it can't possibly have been both. Ordinarily, I'd have to laugh at myself and agree with you. But the truth is that the afternoon when I met Mr. Tanaka Ichiro really was the best and the worst of my life.
Isn't that wonderful? It just makes you want to run out and order that book. I think if I'd been listening to her narrate books, I'd recognize her voice anywhere. Well, apparently people do.
Somebody stopped me in my lobby about 5 years ago, and he had a seeing-eye dog. I didn't pay too much attention because we were surrounded by seeing-eye dogs in the offices of the American Foundation for the Blind, and because the staff were all visually impaired, not all, but quite a few of them. And I was talking to somebody in the lobby, and this man turned around and said, excuse me, are you Yolande Bavan? And I said, yes. And he said, oh, I read so many books by you. I thought, I know that voice. I know that voice. Now let me tell you, something only happened recently. I had gone to the physiotherapist after I'd had some surgery on my shoulder, and I was sitting in the sort of place where the clients sit until they're called in to have their therapy. And there was a gentleman who was visually impaired, and with him was a seeing-eye dog. I didn't say anything. The dog was sleeping near him. And I started talking to something, and suddenly this dog got up and lunged toward me, dragging everything, almost his owner with him, who was sitting in a chair. He just lunged towards me, and I said, hello, what are you doing, doggy, or something, you know? What are you doing? And the man said to me, he knows your voice. And he was there also to have physiotherapy. And he said, Hickory, that was the name of the dog, he said. But Hickory has listened to you at home for so many years. That's why he lunged and pulled. He knew your voice. Is that amazing?
That's pretty cool. To be recognized not just by the people, but by the dogs who also get to listen to the books. Well, you may recognize that wasn't our usual breaker tune. That was Yolande Bavan singing Stops and Goes Blues. Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll meet Yolande Bavan.
Nancy and I first found out about her when we were watching a play in Toronto, a very funny play called My Granny the Goldfish. Anyway, we were reading the playbill when Nancy noticed that besides her many appearances on Broadway and London stages and other places around the world and her incredible singing career, Yolande Bavan, the main character in the play, had actually narrated over 500 books for the National Library Service. So we thought, wow, maybe we should get in touch with her. So we did, and now we'll have the opportunity to meet her.
Can you introduce yourself, say a little bit about yourself?
Okay, my name is Yolande Pavan. I am from Sri Lanka, and I have lived all over the world. Now I make New York City my home, and glad that I do. And I'm an actress, I'm a jazz singer, I'm a narrator for talking books for the Library of Congress and the National Library Service. I have two cats, and who I love.
Apparently she named the cats after Hindu gods, and she thinks that's given them a little bit of attitude. I think cats come with attitude.
So I know in addition to being an actress, you have quite an interesting singing career, and you alluded to that a little bit. And I thought our listeners would enjoy hearing a little bit about your singing career in the past.
That's been the biggest thing in my life, is to have sung with the top jazz vocal trio in the world. And that's how I came here from England, where I was living, quite happily.
You'll have to tell everybody what that trio was.
It was called Lambert, Hendricks, and Pavan. And the most recent thing I did, which was, I just came back from the Monterey Jazz Festival, where I got an honor for doing a show. It was a jazz opera written by Iola and Dave Brubeck. And it was called The Real Ambassadors. And it was written for Louis Armstrong and his group, Dave and his group, Carmen McRae and Lambert Hendricks and Pavan. And 50 years ago, we did that jazz opera live at Monterey Jazz Festival. So it was the 50th anniversary. So I flew out there to do a presentation of how we did that opera.
That had to be so exciting. That was great music.
I think that's why I speak well, because that singing was the fastest singing anybody has ever done in the world, the singing that we did with the trio.
They sing very quickly and enunciate very well.
Oh, well, we sang the trumpet solos and saxophone solos and piano solos that John Hendricks put lyrics to. Very fast indeed. So I think that's why my reading, I'm able to be clear about what I say.
It's interesting how we build on our experiences in life, and you actually learned something about diction and felt that had an impact on your reading.
There's a great article about that 2012 Monterey Jazz Festival appearance. If you go to www.montereyjazzfestival.org and look for an item about the Real Ambassadors, it's a very interesting article, and there are links to a three-part interview that they did with Yolande Pavan focusing on her singing, and they're all really long links, but we'll have those in our show notes. We're talking to her primarily about her narration of audiobooks.
You are listening to Viewpoints.
This week's focus topic is creating audiobooks for the NLS. For those of you who may not know, NLS stands for National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, Library of Congress, and that's here in the United States. And they produce both talking books and braille books. These days, you can download the books directly to your home. It used to be you had to order the audiobooks and they would come on some sort of cassette or record, depending on which decade you're talking about. The National Library Service has a collection of over 400,000 titles, adding 2,500 every year of all sorts of genres of literature. And they also offer free subscriptions to over 40 periodicals, magazines, newspapers in audio format, and another 30 in Braille. If you want more information about them, you can go to their website, which is www.loc.gov/NLS for National Library Service. And their phone number is 888-657-7323, which conveniently spells NLS Read. How long ago did you first start doing the talking books narration?
I started in 1974.
So how did you get involved first reading books for the National Library Service?
Well, another friend of mine who was recording said I should audition, so I did. And I had a call a few weeks after I auditioned, and I was offered a book, and oh, my goodness. The first book I did, I believe, was what we call a bodice ripper. Do you know that term?
No, I've never heard it. What is it?
Oh, it's a term that we use in the business here. A bodice ripper, which is like all this romance and huffing and puffing and horses sweating and the servant runs away with the master. And that's called a bodice ripper.
Popular book.
Those kind of books. Some of them are fun, except some of them are so outrageous that it's hard to keep a straight face and record it. Because you just want to scream. You want to scream with laughter, you know. It's just so kind of over the top.
But you went back for more books to record, presumably after that.
Yes, they called me in for different books, and then it started getting very diverse and more interesting and harder to do.
How many books do you figure you've read?
I think approximately 510 or something.
Wow.
Yes.
And out of all those books, were there some, besides your bodice ripper that you started with, were there some that were more memorable to you for various reasons?
Oh, yes, of course. If I can have my memory serve me correctly. I read Memoirs of a Geisha, which is a very big seller book. Mm-hmm. And then they made a movie. That was very memorable to read. I read a book by Salman Rushdie, which had something to do with Hamlet, kind of very intellectual.
Well, I was kind of curious. I actually looked up your name in the NLS Bard site with a list of books, and it certainly had a whole slew of books by you. And I noticed a lot of them were books with themes from the East, and you said you were from Sri Lanka. I was wondering, do you get a choice of the books you read, or do you recommend and say, I'd like to read this? How does that come about?
No, the books come into the offices of Talking Books, where there are, you know, the head of Talking Books and the people that assist him and the people who do the business part of it. And the heads of it look at the books and they say, oh, I think Jane Smith would really be perfect for this book. Or they would say, oh, I think Yolande Vaughan would be really terrific for this book. They kind of pick it.
Got it.
We have no sort of choosing.
Mm-hmm. It's always amazed me how well those books are read and the artistry that goes into it in terms of the readers changing their voices for the different characters and just the emphasis and all. Is that artistic interpretation left up to you for the most part, or how does that work?
Yes, because they've seen the work you have done before, and the people who choose you, like the producers in the offices, in the recording studios, know your work, so they will say, oh, I think so-and-so. And even though there's somebody else who could possibly do it as well, there's some little thing that the other person has that they think would suit a character better. And some characters, a lot of characters, many characters, not just one or two, you know, not like Memoirs, which had definitely a Japanese person in it, and a lot of Japanese people around her. But I guess it's what they hear, you know, and it's what NLS chooses or says, yeah, that was perfect.
Were there any books that were particularly fun to do?
There was a book by a Welshman, gosh, whose name I cannot recall. I had to do like 74 voices in it. It was so weird. I had to do earthworms, bookworms. How can I remember? I recorded three of his books. By the time I got to the third book, I thought, I can't remember an earthworm's voice from a fly's voice, you know? What did I do?
How do you keep track of the voices?
Well, sometimes I kind of write, make a list. As I'm doing the book, I write, you know, earthworm, squeaky. Squeaky voice. A bookworm would be different under this. And oh, it was the most amazing books, those books. I thought I would go bananas. And I have to be consistent. Otherwise, NLS would fire you.
It's a marvel how they're able to keep all of those voices straight. And as somebody who listens to audiobooks, I'm glad they do, because it really makes it easier for the listener to keep straight who all the various characters are.
It's like listening to a play.
Were there any books that were particularly challenging for you?
I did a book which is perhaps the hardest book for me to do, was called The Bhagavad Gita. It's 4 volumes. It was an adaptation by a very famous priest monk. It took him 14 years to adapt it. That book was incredibly difficult to do. It took me 6 months to record that book. It's a religious type of book. It's a section that's taken out from perhaps the largest book ever written and the oldest book ever written, the Mahabharata. So it's only a section that's taken out of it, and it's enormous, enormous. I actually thought I was going to have a mini nervous breakdown because there was nobody here who could help me, because it was in Pali, all the slokas, all the prayers and the chants. It was phonetically written, but it was Pali. And you had to know exactly where to put the stress, where to link the last letter of the word previous to 2 letters in the word after, and where the inflection should go up or go down or stay neutral. It was an honor to do it. It was one of those things that come once in a lifetime to get to record something like that.
I wonder if you could walk us through the process of recording one of these books. So they contact you and say, Yolande, hey, would you like to do this book? And what happens from there, from when you pick it up and then go into the studios?
Oh, well, they say you'll start recording in 3 days, at which point you have a nervous breakdown and you try to find pronunciations.
Doesn't it take some time to prepare ahead of time, I would guess, to know who the characters are? I mean, sometimes it's not always obvious.
Sometimes they don't give you that much time. They'll call you and say, oh, there's a book here, and we will start recording in a week. And you say, thank you so much, because you have a week in which to bring it home and then start working on it and preparing it and thinking of characters and voices and stuff like that. This was the most difficult. All the chants and the prayers were originally in Pali, which is the language, and some Sanskrit. And I had to contact a Sri Lankan monk in a monastery in Queens. And he was very kind, very kind. He was like a scholar. So he would help me twice a week, which really wasn't sufficient. But he did the best he could for me. And I would not have been able to do the book without him.
Wow. So that's a ton of preparation even before you get to the studio.
Oh, yes. Oh, you have to. You can't get to the studio with it. Time is very important. If you're recording the 10 to 12 session, you use that time to record, not to prepare the book or look for pronunciations. You can run to the dictionaries and double-check a pronunciation, which are there. Lots of dictionaries are there on the shelves, and then you can do that. However, you know, it's just hard. It's hard. It's not easy. And then there are some books that you can just sail through.
We were trying to walk through the process. You get the book, you get all the research you can in the amount of time they've allotted you to figure out the pronunciation and stuff.
Uh-huh.
You develop at least enough voices for the first 2 hours worth of recording, then what happens?
That's right. That's how you do it, because you can't sometimes do the whole thing unless the book is needed in a very short amount of time back. Then you get double sessions. So then you have to be ready for 2 recording sessions.
And each session is 2 hours?
Yes.
I hope you get a break in between.
2 hours you get, I think, 20 minutes, yes.
That's a lot of reading at once. I've had people offer to read to me before when I was in graduate school, and they thought mm-hmm. this was an easy task, and they'd find out that after reading for 20 minutes, they couldn't speak anymore. I'm wondering, is that something you just trained at doing because you're an actress, or how hard is it?
I think so. But, you know, if you get a sore throat or something, it's very trying because you're trying to rise above that sore throat while you're recording so it doesn't come through the microphone.
Mm-hmm.
And those microphones are extremely, extremely sensitive. Well, they would be.
So now you sit there and you're reading and you have someone also reading another copy to sort of monitor? How does that work?
Yes, he's in the next room and we can see each other through glass. They monitor it because they have to see if there's any static on the tape or the tape has broken down. All the electronic stuff they see too. And they're also reading the text with you, because if you make a mistake, then we stop and we'll go back and correct it right away. And we can make a lot of mistakes, because by about an hour, and 45 minutes, your eyes are going like, you might skip a word or something. Everybody, I mean, it's just a human thing.
So there's you, you're the narrator, there's the copy reader. Is there also a sound engineer?
He's both. He's the sound engineer and the copyholder, as we call him. Because something can happen on the tape that I don't hear, but he can hear. Some technical thing, you know, that I don't hear because I'm just talking into the mic. He's hearing everything come through on the tape, or it wasn't analog anymore. It became digital and stuff like that. But then all the more so because he can hear more than I can. I don't hear anything. I just read.
So you say you just read, but this must be pretty exhausting. How do you feel at the end of reading for 2 hours?
Actually, 2 hours isn't too bad. But I have done six-hour sessions, and that is well nigh. You're exhausted. I just want to jump in a taxi and go home at the end of it and put a cold thing over my eyes. Cucumber or something over my eyes.
So then presumably you're done with the book, but you may hear a few months later that they needed some extra editing that they didn't catch. Does that happen occasionally?
Oh, yes, because first of all, there are staff that listen to the book on tape, and they will make corrections and say, no, this was wrong. Or they'll say, we heard the chair moving in the studio, or we heard somebody was bumping something on the ceiling above. All came through on the tape, you know, so we had to redo it. They try to clean it up as much as possible before it goes to NLS. And yet there are people who do nothing but proofread for NLS and Washington Library of Congress. That's their job, to proofread everything that comes. And then they find mistakes. And the list of mistakes is listed down and sent back to New York City. So you go in to do what we call corrections. Oh, I have to tell you the funny story. Most of the readers, my fellow readers, were in awe that I was recording that book called the Bhagavad Gita. And the book was finished 6 months later. It was like, oh, that's it. I did it. And it went away. It was, you know, proofed here, and then it went off to NLS. And then they get a letter from the head of NLS to the head of our talking books section saying, dear Tony, Miss Bhavan is really amazing. We cannot understand how she did this book. It was extremely well done. I'm sorry to say, but there's one correction that has to be done. You know what I did? I screamed and fell on the floor in the studio when they told me that. After recording for 6 months, there was one word I had said that had to be changed. It was a San Cristobal as opposed to San Cristobal.
You remember that still?
It wasn't even Pali. It wasn't even Sanskrit. It was Spanish. And it's a place in somewhere in California. And there's also San Cristobal in Spain. I didn't realize this was a place in California which had a different stress. Yeah. And my copy holder didn't say anything. Usually they're very on top of it and they'd say, no, no, let's look this up because I think this is a place in California. And they pronounce it differently. So tiring to get to the end of the book and say the wrong pronunciation for San Cristobal. And then after 6 months of being in the studio, I had to go into the studio for 2 minutes to change that word.
Some things you never forget.
With good reason.
How do you fit all this reading in with a very active acting career?
Well, when I've done a play, I've recorded two. When we were in a rehearsal process, maybe not as much, because rehearsals would be 10 to 5 or something. But when you are in the production, then all your days are free except for matinees. So you can record a lot. So the head of the studios, because he knows that, as soon as you start performing and he knows your days, he can book you for a double session. And you can still do the theater piece in the evening.
Yeah, so the schedules seem to mesh somehow and you can just work it all out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, we do.
Just doing a little bit of simple arithmetic, managing to record over 500 books since 1974, you must have averaged over a book a month?
Yes, yeah, sometimes. Mm-hmm. If there were small books, I could do 2 books in a month. If there were like paperbacks and those light books, light where I didn't have to look up
words
in Greek or Vietnamese or Chinese, or those are difficult languages. Now, there are readers who speak like nine languages. You may have listened to somebody named Ed Blake, I don't know if you remember, from Talking Books NLS. He recorded for a long time.
Oh, I don't recognize the name.
He spoke nine languages.
Sounds like a long, involved process.
Yes, but such a gratifying thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I think of these books going all over the world and people being able to hear it and get something from it that could enhance their lives and their experiences in life, you know, being visually impaired, that these books can give them something emotionally, politically, make them angry, make them this, like going to the theater, which is there to ennoble you and to make you angry and laugh and scream and hate it and love it and all the human emotions. And I really appreciate the opportunity to have even recorded five words for people who are visually impaired. Even if I had recorded five words, I would have been so grateful.
Well, and I must say myself, as an avid listener of these books for many, many years from the NLS, that I really appreciate the effort, the artistry, and the professionalism that goes into making these books. They are truly wonderful. As I said before, it's like sitting in a personal play with your headphones on and listening to that yourself. They do a great job.
Well, and with the description that Yolande just gave us about how many people are forever checking on pronunciation and phraseology and making sure all the correct words are spoken, starting before she ever goes into the studio and finishing well after she comes out, it's no wonder they come out so good.
At 1 o'clock, a party may start slumping, you know. To keep a party hot, be smart, to let your feet get to bumping. Turn the music on and rattle the walls a little when the neighbors start complaining and remaining, you know, the joint is jumping.
Well, that was also not our usual breaker tune. That was Yolande Bavan singing 1 o'clock Jump.
If you listen to our show regularly, you'll know that usually at this point we have a high-tech item. Well, we decided this week that Yolande's story was so fascinating that we decided to focus on her story. But to make up for that, next week's show will be particularly high tech.
As usual, if you missed any of the links or telephone numbers we gave, they will all be in the show notes, which you can find on our website at www.viewpointsplus.net. That's it for show number 1247. Next week on Viewpoints, we'll be talking about displaying graphs in audio format. Have you ever encountered a set of data and wanted to understand what its graph is like? Dave Engebretson, a blind geologist, demonstrates audio versions of graphs of several geological phenomena. And then we'll speak with John Taylor from ViewPlus about their audiographing calculator and how you can do audiographs yourself. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to contact@viewpointsplus.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Viewpoints, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey in partnership with WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.viewpointsplus.net. You can also follow us on Facebook or Twitter at Viewpoints Plus. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Viewpoints, and have a nice day.